The wind on the roof did not blow. It attacked. It came off the Hudson in sheets, cold and wet and smelling of river mud and coal smoke, hitting Pearl like a fist wrapped in wet wool. She pressed herself against the parapet, her boots sliding on the tar-papered surface, and looked up at the skeleton of the unfinished tower that rose above Blackwell's private terrace. It was a steel ribcage jutting into the gray sky, girders bare and rivets exposed, a monument to ambition that had been abandoned 3 weeks ago when the money ran out. Or when Astrid Blackwell decided it was safer to leave. Pearl had climbed the service stairs from the terrace door. The door had been unlocked. That was the first thing she noticed. The second was the sound of the wind howling through the open girders, a low, keening noise that sounded almost like a voice. Almost. She adjusted her grip on the brass scissors in her coat pocket and began to climb the external ladder bolted to the south face of the structure. It was rusted. It was slick with rain. It was the kind of ladder a man in a gray coat would hesitate to descend, but Pearl had spent her life climbing things that were not meant to be climbed. She put her weight on the first rung. The metal groaned. She did not look down. The wind tore at her coat. It tried to peel her off the iron rungs to spin her around and drop her 30 feet onto the cobblestones of the private courtyard below. She kept her eyes on the next rung, the next, the next. Her burned forearm throbbed where the glass shrapnel had kissed her skin weeks ago, a dull ache that synchronized with her heartbeat. Left, right, left, right, the rhythm of ascent, the rhythm of survival. She reached the third floor level when the figure appeared. Astrid Blackwell stood on the platform, her back to the wind, her silver hair plastered to her skull in dark, elegant waves. She wore a coat of charcoal wool, tailored to within an inch of its life, and a hat pinned so fiercely to her head that Pearl wondered if it would survive the descent. In one hand, she held a parasol black silk, useless in this weather, held like a cane. In the other, she held nothing. Her hands were empty. Her posture was perfect. "You climbed three flights of exposed iron in a gale," Astrid said. Her voice was calm, precise, carrying over the wind as if she were speaking in a drawing room rather than on the roof of a half-built office block. "How very American of you." Pearl stopped on the rung. Her boots hung over the edge. 40 feet below, the terrace gates were rusted shut, just like the ones on Fifth Avenue. "I'm not American," Pearl said. "I'm Irish. There's a difference." "Is there?" Astrid tilted her head. A strand of silver hair escaped her hat and whipped across her face. She did not brush it away. "Your father thought there was a difference. He died believing in distinctions that did not exist." The words landed between them like stones, dropped into still water. Pearl felt the ripple move through her chest, cold and expanding. She kept her face still. She kept her hands steady on the ladder rails. "My father believed in the law," she said. "You know this." "I know your father believed in me." The wind screamed. A rivet somewhere above them popped loose and clattered down into the darkness, bouncing off girders with a sound like a coin dropped on marble. Pearl counted the beats of her own heart before she spoke. 1, 2, 3. "That's a lie," she said. Astrid smiled. It was a small, mournful thing, the kind of smile a mother gives a child who has just admitted to stealing cookies from the jar. "Is it? Look at the knot, Pearl. Really look at it. Not the version you constructed in your head, the version that existed on your father's coat, in your father's pocket, in your father's blood." Pearl's fingers closed around the brass scissors in her pocket. The metal was warm from her body heat. Cold, it was always cold. "I know what I saw." "You saw what you wanted to see. 12 stitches, diagonal cross, hidden loop, you called it a signature, you called it the mark of the original master. You were right, of course, but you assumed the wrong master." Pearl's breath hitched. The wind filled her lungs, cold and sharp, tasting of iron and river rot. "Selah's vein." "No," Astrid's voice did not rise. It never rose, it never had. "Not the syndicate. Vane was a mechanic. He tied knots for money. He tied them because he was good at his trade and he needed the work. He was never the architect. He was never the designer. Your father knew this. He knew it because he designed the knots himself." The world tilted. Not physically, the roof remained level. The ladder remained vertical, but something inside Pearl's chest shifted, a beam giving way under a load it was never meant to bear. She gripped the rails harder. Her knuckles turned white. "That's impossible," she said, but her voice lacked conviction. It sounded thin. It sounded like a child arguing with a parent. "Is it?" Astrid stepped forward. She moved across the wet platform with the grace of a woman who had spent 50 years learning how to occupy space without apologizing for it. "Think, Pearl. Think about the silk knot in your father's pocket. Think about the tension. Think about the way the hidden loop catches the light. Who taught you to read a knot?" "Pearl's father." The answer came unbidden, automatic, drilled into her since childhood. "Thread tension is everything, Pearl. A loose stitch unravels. A tight stitch holds. But the hidden loop is where the truth lives." "My father," she whispered. "Your father was the original master," Astrid said. "Before Vane, before the syndicate, before the blood and the bribes and the bodies on the steps of depots, he was the one who invented the silk knot. He was the one who taught Vane how to tie it. And he was the one who decided, 6 months ago, that he wanted out." Pearl's mouth opened. No sound came out. The wind stole it. "He wanted out," Astrid continued, "but the syndicate does not release its architects. So he made a compromise. He offered me something in exchange for his silence, something valuable, something that would allow him to walk away from the game entirely." "What?" Pearl's voice was a rasp, dry, cracked. "What did he offer you?" Astrid's eyes gray, cold, ancient locked onto Pearl's. "You." The word hit Pearl like a physical blow. She staggered back, her boot heels slipping on the wet tar paper. She caught herself on the rail. Her heart hammered against her ribs, a frantic, bird-like thing trying to escape a cage. "You," Astrid repeated. "Your expertise, your reputation, your ability to dismantle operations from the inside. I offered your father a choice. He could retire, take his pension, live out his days in peace, or he could continue his investigation and watch you suffer the consequences. He chose retirement. He chose your safety." "Liar," Pearl said. The word tore out of her throat, raw and ragged. "He was investigating you. He was writing your name in blood. He was." "He was writing my name in blood to protect you," Astrid interrupted, her voice still perfectly modulated, still devastating in its calm. "Do you think I would have let him live if he had been hunting me? Do you think I would have allowed a retired detective with a bad heart to wander into my territory and leave a warning on the marble steps?" "No, Pearl. He wrote that name because he knew I would come for him. He wrote it so that when I killed him, you would have a reason to keep looking. A reason to keep fighting. A reason to stay alive long enough to finish what he started." Pearl's vision blurred, rain or tears she could not tell. The gas lamps below cast long, distorted shadows across the rooftop, stretching Astrid's figure into something monstrous, something larger than life. "Why?" she managed. "Why tell me this now?" "No," Astrid said softly. "You're doing exactly what he would have done. That is the tragedy, isn't it?" She lifted the parasol, testing its weight in her hand the way a fencer tests a blade. "He taught you to read the knot. Now you're tying one yourself. Same hands, same patience. Same blind devotion to a pattern you can't see through." Pearl's hand moved to her pocket. The brass scissors were there. Heavy, familiar, an extension of her arm. "I'm doing what he should have done," she said. The wind howled again, louder this time, a dying animal caught in the girders, screaming into the void. The gale shrieked anew, a ragged, desperate cry that seemed to tear at the ironwork above, sounding like a beast trapped in the steel ribs of the roof. Pearl closed her eyes. She saw her father's hands calloused, scarred, steady tying a silk knot for the first time. She saw the precision, the elegance, the hidden loop that caught the light. She saw the love in his hands, the desperate attempt to create something beautiful in a world that demanded ugliness. "He loved you," Pearl said. She opened her eyes. Astrid was watching her with an expression that might have been pity, might have been contempt. "He loved me, and he would rather die than let you hurt me. That's not a compromise, that's a father." Astrid's smile faded. For the first time, something flickered across her face, a crack in the porcelain, a hairline fracture in the ice. It lasted a fraction of a second. Then it was gone. "Then you understand why I cannot let you leave this roof," Astrid said. She moved, fast, faster than Pearl expected. The parasol came down in a sharp arc, aiming for Pearl's head. Pearl ducked. The black silk snapped past her ear, missing by inches, and caught on the iron railing behind her. She spun, her hand closing around the brass scissors, pulling them from her pocket, turning to face the woman who had orchestrated her father's death. Astrid stood 10 feet away, empty-handed, waiting. You think those will help you? Astrid asked. In this wind, on this height. Pearl didn't answer. She backed toward the ladder. Her boots found the first rung. The second, the wind tried to push her off. She dug her heels in. She kept her eyes on Astrid, on the woman who had sold her father's silence, on the woman who had signed her father's death warrant. You're wrong, Pearl said. I don't need the scissors to climb. She turned. She climbed. Fast. Faster than she had before. The wind tore at her coat. The rain stung her eyes. The iron rungs bit into her palms. Behind her, she heard Astrid's voice, carried on the gale, cold and precise and utterly devoid of fear. Run then, Astrid called. Run all you want. The knot holds, Pearl, it always holds. Pearl did not look back. She did not slow. She reached the terrace door. She threw herself through it. She landed on the wet stone of the private courtyard and ran. The gale shrieked through the rigging, tearing at the canvas awnings. The dying animal screamed. And somewhere in the darkness, the man in the gray coat watched, waiting, patient, inevitable. Pearl Casey ran into the night, her father's name on her lips, her father's blood on her hands, and the terrible certainty that the knot was tighter than she had ever imagined. She ran, she did not stop, she did not look back. The city breathed around her. The gears ticked. The escapements counted. And Pearl Casey ran faster than she had ever run before because she finally understood what she was running from, and she finally understood what she was running toward. The evidence was in her pocket, the truth was in her head, and the knot, the silk knot, was unraveling. Stitch by stitch, thread by thread, loop by hidden loop. She would finish it, she would finish it all. For her father, for herself, for the truth. Whatever the cost, whatever it took. She ran.